Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. The Pro Wrestling Year in Review series continues the final 4 months of the year. Almost here, but we start with that in September. Joining me is Davey Portman of Post Wrestling and also the Poison Rana podcast. And no, we don't sing September by Earth, Wind, and Fire, but we do talk about AEW All Out, which saw the dastardly turn of Jon Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli against Bryan Danielson at All Out. And of course, who can forget that? Wild, crazy. The words don't even fit. Say the unsanctioned cage match between Hangman Page and Swerve Strickland that closed that show. We talk all about that. Of course, we talk about the biggest news in TNA Japan. And of course, WWE, which included the debut of the long awaited by some Mr. McMahon series on Netflix. We talk all about that. The fallout from that, the interesting quotes, the one thread that several guests of mine have pointed out this entire series. So we talk all about that. SmackDown returning to USA Network, Bad Blood taking shape, and tons of other WWE and, of course, NXT news as well. And then we jump into the junk drawer, the basically all the things that didn't fit in these other categories, all types of news there. This is a fun, almost 90-minute show. So enjoy this. Merry Christmas. And yeah, here we go. September. Your review series of Josh Nason's Punch-Out with Davey Portman begins now. Well, the Your Interview series continues, and they look at September. And I had a good warm-up for this about, give or take, a month ago or so, maybe a month and a half ago, with looking into history, research, all that stuff with my guest at this time, Davey Portman. Poison Rod, a podcast. You can hear that on his Patreon, he and Bray, Braden, rather, and also in post-wrestling, of course. And I got a chance to be a guest for a super-sized edition of the podcast. We talked about one of John Cena's many title reigns as part of the series that that Davey is doing, and it was a lot of fun. Davey, welcome back for the second consecutive year, I believe. And yeah, that was a lot of fun. It was a good, again, it was a good warm up for this series in terms of research and all that.
Absolutely, yeah. I think this might be our third time. I might be wrong.
Might be third. You're right. Correct.
Might be third. Yeah, we had you on. You're a fantastic guest on The Champ Is Here. Braden and I over at Poison Rana decided to do a show chronicling all 16, maybe 17, who knows, title wins of John Cena leading up to his retirement at the end of 2025. So not just looking at the title wins itself, but, you know, the promos going into it, all the silly segments on Raw and SmackDown leading into it, and then going right through the reign until their title loss. And, Josh, you can tell you do this for a living, because you're watching every single thing I sent. I had a list of like must watch and this is more for context, but you watched everything and were such a fantastic guest on that show, talking all about the life of John Cena.
Yes, that was fun. You can check those out, of course, on the Poison Rana Patreon. You can also check them out on YouTube. They come out about give or take a month or so after they go on the Patreon, and all that's on your YouTube channel. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, all of these are going to be available for free at some point. Sure. We're kind of giving our patrons something first, but then, yeah, after about a month, we're releasing these for free because a lot of work goes into them. So we want as many people to hear this show as possible.
Exactly. Yeah. So we went through, I think it was 07 and 08.
Yeah.
If I remember right. Yeah. It was a lot of Raws, a lot of different pay-per-views and things like that. There's some JBL, some Chris Jericho. One of the things that stood out, because as I mentioned, I had not seen any of this stuff since I originally watched it, you know, back in the day, was how many of these people are still around now in some form in our wrestling lives. And they don't really, you know, they don't really go away. And I mean, people from like, you know, Punk, I mean, JBL is still around doing stuff. We're not really kind of sure what is happening with him. But of course, Cena's doing his retirement tour, as mentioned, Jericho. There's so many of these talents that are still in our wrestling lives all these years later. So it definitely was a fun trip back, but it felt like we've never said goodbye, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Pretty much all of those characters are still around today in one way or the other.
Yes. We'll check that out for sure. Yeah. So we're going to go in the month of September, a big month, as you might expect. Actually, all these months are big. There's no light months in this series, that's for sure. But we kick off on the AEW side of things to start with. Of course, we had All Out, which took place just 2 weeks after All In at Wembley Stadium. All Out returning to the Now Arena in Chicago, Illinois. And of course, we had a few different things on the show of note. And the big one here, of course, the unsanctioned cage match that finished the show, Hangman Page defeating Swerve Strickland, notable for so many reasons, so much violence, especially the hypodermic needle in the mouth.
Oh, yeah.
At the end, Sky Blue made her on-screen return during the 0 hour, still has not returned to action yet after breaking her ankle. Jon Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli turned on Bryan Danielson after Danielson defeated Jack Perry in the main event. We also had Daniel Garcia returning to lay out MJF after their match. Champions basically all swept in the entire show. Mustafa Ali was backstage. The Costco guys were backstage. They would be doing some stuff later on. And then after some injury angles to the aforementioned MJF and Swerve Strickland, they were taking some time off. But yeah, you know, it's hard to have a real impact for some of these AEW pay-per-views. So when they're so close together, you know, there's not a lot of breathing time between All In and All Out. This time, you know, it was 2 weeks versus 1 week, which is good. But I think the thing that most people are always going to remember, you know, that there was the angle against Danielson, but the violence level, the cage match, and all the different spots had a lot of people talking afterward, after the show.
Yeah, I think they did a much better job this year. I think last year, All Out was literally the week after All In, whereas there was 2 weeks, so a little bit of breathing room this time round. I thought they did the All In, All Out thing so much better this year. I felt they actually treated All In more like their WrestleMania. They treated it like the big deal it should be. And I, as much as I enjoyed the first All In and Wembley, I don't think they made as big a deal about that as they could have done. And I thought stories were all clearly building to that big show this year. And then All Out, they left enough, like you mentioned, the Hangman and Swerve feud. They left that for All Out. And I got a real sense that All Out this year was the Empire Strikes Back. You know, you had the nice, glossy, shiny A New Hope in All In, and then All Out was just grittier, dirtier, had the baddies win at the end with the turn on Danielson. And I just thought they did so much of a better job. And I do think they're still booking themselves in a corner. Tony, you don't need to do these shows so close together.
Sure.
And it would definitely benefit them to have more of a breathing room. But I thought they managed it a lot more successfully this year. And yeah, that unsanctioned cage match was crazy between Swerve and Hangman. I think as we're all coming to our end of year rewards, I definitely think for me, it's between that feud and it's between Drew and Punk, mm-hmm. as to what is the feud of 2024. Just a crazy feud those guys had. And the BCC turn on Danielson at the end was genuinely shocking. And, you know, the bag angle and all that, like they sold it really well. We can talk about the follow-up as whether we've thought that's been as good or not coming out of it. But I thought the actual first angle itself at All Out was very well done.
Yep, I would agree. Yeah, I think the you mentioned the time between pay-per-views. I think moving this off of Labor Day, at least here in the States, I think is big. They're very big into AEW, very big into tradition and the specific times of year, and I think in places. And I think the more they kind of get away from that when the time is right, that's going to help them out. You know, Wrestle Dream does not have to be the first weekend in October. It could be, if it makes sense. I think really it's kind of like try to get that 4 to 5 week break. That seems to be a good breathing. It's just kind of what people are used to, unless you absolutely can't. But to me, that makes the most amount of sense because you have time to think and process and plan and think about that. And you go so rapid fire, it does make it hard to have things have impact and set in. And that's kind of part of the storyline aspect of things.
Yeah. Like, I mean, Chicago is a great city and a great wrestling city, but you are burning the market the amount you do these shows there. And especially running on Labor Day weekend. Labor Day weekend tends to be a bit more expensive to travel than other weekends of the year. True. So you're asking a lot of your audience who, someone like me who lives in Toronto, I've made the trip to Chicago a few times. But, you know, I look at flights for this kind of thing and I go, oh, no, that's an expensive weekend to be going. So I traditions are all great, but you're still a very new company and maybe don't need to be. I think a lot of these traditions have been a detriment to the company over the years.
I agree. Let's go through a bunch of other headlines and stuff. I want to go through in smaller chunks, and we'll kick it over to you for thoughts. We had the report that the AWBD, a lot of letters there, reportedly agree a multi-year rights TV deal that wouldn't be announced, of course, till October. Tony Khan announcing, you know, it was a 90% chance that the deal is going to be announced in next month. So it would be give or take over the next month. And Swerve Strickland said AEW is, quote unquote, about to get on Fox. And that still has not happened to this point. It was not part of the media deal. Could happen at some point, but the further we get away from it, it just seems doubtful for now. Ricky Starks saying that he had never turned down an AEW creative pitch. Of course, he had not been in action since, I believe, March in AEW. Still is not. And we'll talk more about the series of how that relationship has changed quite a bit. The turnstile count was finally revealed by the local government for AEW All In. They didn't announce an attendance or anything like that. Still a very, very, very healthy attendance there for some reason. I don't know why. Everyone assumed attendance would be down, but you know, a crowd of, you know, 50-ish thousand, give or take, and multi-million dollar gate over $6 million and not announcing, I thought was, I still think that's a strange, strange move. Jamie Hayter said she was bedbound for months with herniated disc, or she was out for better part of a year and a half. Kevin Kelly and the Tate twins filed a lawsuit against AEW. Swerve Strickland purchased his childhood home. There was a home. I don't know what it was. And eventually got burned down by Hangman Page and started leading into All Out. That was a very memorable end of Dynamite that I think probably one of the top moments on Dynamite of the year, arguably, in terms of people that remember it and had that impact and all that. Let's see. AEW filed to trademark AEW Shockwave. Many people assume that's going to be the name of a third show if it ever does happen. Sanjay Dutt underwent reverse total shoulder replacement surgery. The Blade underwent successful back fusion surgery. He's been out the majority of the year. Sammy Guevara and Hologram, they had a AEW Lucha Libre match ahead of a Jacksonville Jaguars game. The first time they've kind of interacted those brands like that. And as part of their fan fest ahead of their opening game. Thunder Rosa dealing with a concussion. Tony Storm challenged Mayu Iwatani to an IWGP women's title match at a Stardom event, and there was a report out there that before Megan Thee Stallion signed a deal with WWE to do the theme for SmackDown and so on, the Mercedes Moné had talked about it. WWE swooped in, and they expect that partnership, but Mercedes Moné afterwards saying, I just should have kept my mouth shut. That deal would have happened for AEW, and who knows what else happened after that. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, a lot there. I mean, the TV rights thing is huge. We literally yesterday got more announcements about what's going on with HBO Max and all that with AEW. The stuff about Fox is still interesting, and I possibly tie that in with the trademark of Shockwave. I'm still curious to see what that is. Personally, like I don't think AEW needs another wrestling show. But if you're going on a different network and being on a Fox or something, I think more of a clip show of highlights of the week would be very beneficial. I'm thinking when I was a kid, that's how I consumed a lot of my wrestling, was watching shows more like Heat and Metal, where you might get one match from lower card guys, but in general, they're filling you in with Raw, SmackDown, pay-per-views and things. And maybe the amount of content AEW has, I think something like that on a different channel, maybe getting some new eyes and filling people in, might be more beneficial to them than just another hour of TV, which they do have a lot of wrestling going on as it is.
Certainly do. So yeah, something like WWE Main Event, which I think still exists somewhere. somewhere in the world.
The ether.
Exactly. Let's go through this next chunk of headlines. Will Ospreay versus Ricochet there. One of their rematches, of course, set for AEW, the fifth anniversary of Dynamite. That was a really high anticipated match, of course, given their clashes in the past. Cash Wheeler nearly retired following his 2023 arrest for aggravated assault. Tony Khan and the whole thing about the neck brace and wearing it during the NFL draft and so on, that was finally going to be featured on an episode of NFL Films Presents. Miro reportedly requested his AEW release. No big surprise there. At this point, still has not got it. AEW was... Despite this Danny Garcia will he won't he took up a lot of time over this this month stretch, and we're talking about, I believe, in July and August and so on, at this point saying they were less confident that Danny Garcia would re-sign with the company. William Regal rejected a claim that he was snaking out the competition while he was in AEW. Come Be Hell Grand Slam, their annual show at Arthur Ashe Stadium in Queens, New York. Tony Khan saying he absolutely wants to keep the show going in New York, despite the fact that Grand Slam is coming to Australia in February. Bryan Danielson defeated Nigel McGuinness at that show. That was a fun retro match for a lot of people, and a match at some point they didn't think they ever get a chance to see again. And after All In and Nigel appearing in the Battle Royal and all that, it just felt right to do this, especially if this is going to be, you know, who knows about Danielson's final run. I thought this fit, and I thought people really enjoyed it. Jim Ross did commentary for the show. Of course, kind of in and out with various injuries and ailments. Hook retired the FTW title at the show, handed it to Taz, and I think that was the thing that definitely was the right time to do it, probably overdue in a lot of ways. And then Minoru Suzuki made a surprise appearance during the Collision portion of that show. Danielson versus John Moxley world title match is official for WrestleDream. Company announcing they were no longer offering pay-per-views on Bleacher Report, which a lot of people rejoiced on. Matt Taven said that Wardlow was out due to a knee injury. We have not seen him in quite some time. Soraya reportedly re-signed a contract with the company for 1 year. And then in these latest chapter in the drama that we would see in Foley more in December, AEW was adding injury time to Ray Phoenix's contract, which did not go over well with him. Of course, in August, we talked about in the last episode, there were some rumors essentially that it was a done deal. They thought they were going to WWE, both Lucha Brothers, and that they had already signed deals, even though they both had they were both still under AEW contract and could not legally do that. So a big, big cluster F there, so to speak. Thoughts about any of that?
I mean, I think it's been one of the big ongoing stories this year with AEW is the whole contract situations with, you know, you've got Ricky Starks in there, Miro, Daniel Garcia, the Lucha Brothers. I don't know how you feel about it. I just, look, these guys are great, but they're not CM Punk. I don't think there's a worry about losing a Miro, losing a Ricky Starks to WWE, and suddenly WWE just gets more popular. WWE are at their highest they've ever been at the moment, and I don't think any of these guys are necessarily game changers for them. And I just think it's sad that these guys aren't getting used. I mean, all of them, we don't know the ins and outs. Like you said, Ricky Starks apparently hasn't turned down any creative pitches coming his way. So what is going on there? Why hasn't he been used? I would feel, you know, we had the stuff with Daniel Garcia, and then it seems like, you know, maybe some promises of a bit of a push. He's now in a title run, that kind of thing. I think there are ways where you could tempt a Ricky Starks to stay, you know, with a more of a presence, with bigger stories, being in that upper end of the card, rather than just having them rested and having a talent like Ray Phoenix just sat on the bench when he's, you know, fit and able to go. It's so disappointing. And yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So I think that's one of the biggest things coming out of this stuff here. As for the Danielson McGuinness match, I really enjoyed that match. I wish everything with this Danielson run was just taken with a bit more care. It felt very rushed through. I think there was more of an emotional peak we could have had with that match, with a little bit more of a build. You know, doing this match after he's been taken out, it didn't really allow for any sort of promo time between the two. And really building this thing to reach an emotional peak. I even saw, you know, Nigel potentially trying to save Danielson after one of these Death Rider attacks or something, which would have been sort of the cherry on top. But I enjoyed the match for what it was. I just feel this whole last Danielson run just felt a little rushed, and maybe some things, you know, injury, surgery, all that came out during it and they had to speed up the process, but it just didn't feel completely thought out for me.
Yeah, I would agree. It did feel very compressed timeline. Something where if you have one of the best of all time retiring, you want to have a full kind of plan for it. So I'm going to guess maybe the physical ailments, or they just are like, we just need to fill these dates. And this is what's, but I don't know, but you're right. It definitely lost some steam because it felt compressed. And, you know, once we'll talk about WrestleDream in October, obviously, you know, but once that was done, it was just kind of like, okay. And then it was just like, he was gone. Just like, that was such a deflating end to a pay-per-view. Yeah. I guess it was intended to be, but you know, I think in a year in which we saw Sting honored so just the apex of how I think you can honor a wrestler, and a lot of wrestlers don't want that. They just want to kind of go out their own way. to see in the same year kind of Danielson just kind of like, I'm sure this is the way he wanted to do it, but it was just such a, it's like we saw how great it can be. And people, we want to celebrate people before they retire. That's kind of a, it's a fun thing to do. And I don't think he wanted it that way, or just everything just worked out. But yeah, it felt compressed. We kind of missed something because of that.
I would say even with Sting, like by the end, I went to that show. I went to Revolution. Just I had to be there for Sting's last match. But I even felt building up to that, they could have done more. You know, this is Sting's last time in this city, and I think with the attendance being as it has been this year, they need to promote everything they can. So even if it is with a bit of a wink, like could this be Bryan Danielson's last time in X City? You know. Could have helped promote it. Like potentially Danielson's last match in every city would definitely put some more bums on seats, I think.
I guess the Sting thing was mainly because he takes care of his parents and they weren't doing good, so he wasn't able to commit, which is, it's just, it's unfortunate that, you know, the timing of some of these things with the injuries and that those type of things, like I think it's kind of indicative in a lot of ways of AEW's year, where it's like even the stuff they were able to really get lined up, there was just something that couldn't let them get the full juice out of it. It was kind of out of their control. We'll go to the rest of AEW and Ring of Honor the month. Report was that AEW is strongly considering a new developer for future video games. Of course, at the All in Texas press conference, Tony Khan mentioned something along the, he was asked about video games, and it didn't sound like any new games are coming anytime soon. So we'll see about that. Saraya announced a Hell in Boots memoir that is coming, I believe, in March. Yuka Sakazaki returned to action on Collision. Paul White, everyone wants to see him back in the ring. Hoping to be back in the ring really soon. He really wants to do that Australia show for whatever reason. He's mentioned that before. Bryan Danielson said he got some sort of legal letter from WWE over filing a trademark for Yes. Powerhouse Hobbs was seen visiting backstage with doctors and so on and so forth. So his return appeared to be imminent. Of course, that would happen in November. AEW filed for two new trademarks they haven't used, the Clone and El Clone. Young Bucks posted a picture with Shane McMahon, all over the AEW photo feeds with Tony Khan and then the Young Bucks. Happened to see him at airports. So it was an interesting flight and so on and so forth. Swerve Strickland had there's this so Swerve Strickland got a new contract. It was announced before All in August, and then there was all this talk about a WWE report for saying that their people thought the AEW overpaid him, and there was just this stupid discussion online about this, and just as if people are shelling out their own money for his paycheck and all this stuff. So he had to address this, which was just so unfortunate. He had to do this. MJF joined the cast of Adam Sandler's Happy Gilmore 2 that really kind of took him off the board for a lot of the fall, which I think hurt. I think hurt the company, hurt his standing a little bit. It seemed very in and out, and even the stuff with Adam Cole, which is not hit at all. I think his not being there and doing the kind of the videos just hasn't, it seems just it's checking a box versus something that he's really into. And then Samoa Joe was set to be featured in the next Like a Dragon video game. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, the MJF stuff has been a mess. This whole I understand why they want to wrap up this loose end with Adam Cole, but that whole story's backwards. You know, Cole was the guy that turned on MJF way back when, and as you said, these videos he's sending in just feel so
Half-assed.
shoehorned, half-assed. Doesn't really fit in with the rest of the product. It hasn't been good. And I used to be a very big MJF fan, you know, but he's not at that level yet to be a part-timer in my eyes. Like he's not just had the longevity really to afford doing that. Like doing movies and stuff is great, but maybe just fully take yourself out to do it and then come back and be full-time, because it's just made this whole thing a mess. And I really think it's hurt his stock, and I really think it's hurt Adam Cole's stock. Because it's definitely like dynamite stuff at the moment. I put on where it's where I'm groaning and my focus is going elsewhere. As for the other stuff, I guess the Shane McMahon stuff, that's kind of died down a little bit, but I am a huge Shane McMahon fan, unashamedly. Him versus Kurt Angle is one of the greatest matches of all time in my mind.
Very entertaining,
And yeah, I think there was just that with all these photos coming out. You know, you had the photo with Tony Khan, you had the photo with the Young Bucks. There's part of me going, in a documentary one day where it's the death of AEW, Shane McMahon joining AEW would be the start of that. But also the other part of me is like, I just really want to see it. I just want to know what that would be like. A Shane McMahon Darby Allin match, you know?
You want to see him wrestle. You just don't want to see him as an on-screen.
I don't care. Like, ideally wrestling. But yeah, it's so ridiculous. But I think with all the stuff coming out about Vince McMahon, and I saw further down, we'll be talking a little bit about the documentary. The stuff on that documentary I found the most interesting was Shane and a bit of an insight to him and his relationship with his dad and him just wanting to perform and loving performing and all that. So I did find all of this very interesting. It does feel that buzz has died down now. I don't see it being as likely as maybe it was towards the tail end of the summer, but very interesting all the same.
I think you're the third person in the series to mention that about the Vince doc, about Shane.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Actually, yeah, ever since, every time Shane has come up, the people have said the same thing. It's very fascinating. It seems to be a thing that people took away from that the most. I agree, it would be batshit crazy. Can you imagine a Will Ospreay, Shane McMahon match? Like, what would that look like?
Five stars minimum.
Oh, man, that's right. Break the scale. Going back to the part-timer thing, I don't think AEW's in the position of these guys being part-timers. Like, it's going to be, it's your main job. This is it. And all steam ahead. They got this new TV deal coming up. They have to have a big 2025, and everyone's going to be all in, you know, pun fully intended. They just have to be like, potentially their healthiest, be at their healthiest in terms of top guys for, I don't know how long it's been, if ever, right? I mean, they're going to have...
Well, Kenny coming back potentially.
Kenny, Samoa Joe's ready. MJF will be full. I mean, there's all these guys that are like available. So now's the time to go. So yeah, no time for part-timers. Let's go to, we'll do a little different order than we usually do. Let's do TNA, then we'll do Japan, then we'll do WWE, because a lot to talk about there. Yep. TNA, we'll go through the month of TNA. Killer Kelly and Myron Reed announced a pregnancy. So that's why Killer Kelly has been off TV. Myron Reed was in TNA for like one match and then disappeared again. So I don't know what the deal is there. Steph DeLander signed for the remainder of the year. However, she announced that at an event at Victory Road, she needs neck surgery and her deal is up at the end of the year. So we'll see if she comes back at all there. Rich Swann, dating back to an incident in August, pleaded no contest and was found guilty of a disorderly public intoxication charges. That's a very strange story there. He has not been back since. TNA Victory Road happened. Mike Bailey regained the X Division title, Spitfire, winning the Knockouts tag team titles. Alicia Edwards supposed to be involved in that match, but due to the concussion she suffered at a TV taping or the event the month before, was not medically cleared. And then Brian Myers and Eddie Edwards regaining the tag team titles. We had, NXT stars, other stars appearing, Ariana Grace and JBL. Again, JBL just haunting all these different promotions, doing the same thing. We have no idea what the purpose is, and this has been going for like 5 months. So maybe someday we'll see. Wendy Chu from NXT set to challenge for the Knockouts title. They had to change a match for the match Victory Road was Alicia Edwards. They had to cancel a TV taping due to a Hurricane Helene in North Carolina. They had to move everything to Skyway Studios in Nashville, and all the proceeds from that event went to relief funds. Just no big surprise, Giselle Shaw confirming her departure from the company. Obviously, her boyfriend, Scott D'Amore, fired earlier in the year. Xia Li, formerly of NXT, made her debut. Joe Hendry set to challenge for the TNA World title. October's Bound for Glory. More crossovers. Ariana Grace, as I mentioned, Carmen Petrovic appeared at a taping, as did Sol Ruka, Kendall Gray, and Carly Bright. So not exactly top level of NXT talent, but certainly people that kind of need some work, and they were certainly getting it. And then Hammerstone made a surprise appearance on NXT and wrestled Obafemi. So him getting a big opportunity there gets another big fella. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, TNA had a really interesting year. I think they started with quite a bit of... when the rebranding happened, was that the end of last year or beginning of this year, going back to TNA away from Impact?
So January.
Okay. So you started the year with, I think, a lot of interest. I think a lot of people were interested in it going back to TNA. They had a great attendance for that show. And then the DeBoer firing was shortly after, and I think a lot of people, I think a lot of fans were fond of DeBoer. It seemed the locker room were very fond of DeBoer, and got quite a bit of negative press from that. I remember, you know, likes of Jordan Grace and Josh Alexander tweeting just an hourglass emoji, basically insinuating that they're waiting for their contract to run down. Yep. But then they started picking up. I think the NXT connection has been really beneficial for both sides. You mentioned NXT not necessarily sending top names, but I think that's the right move. It's having a bit of a, you know, excursion kind of thing in NXT can help, and it can help, you know, working with people who aren't doing the same training, like the same performance center way of doing things. I think that can help these performers and just get out of their like zone a little bit. I think that's been great. We saw it work way back when Evolve was still a thing. I'm thinking the Street Profits really found themselves after going to Evolve, and they, when they came back to NXT, they really stepped it up a bunch. I think that's really helped viewership for TNA. I think they've had some really well-sold shows this year. I'm thinking that Montreal show with PCO, yep, all over that did very well. And then the NXT people coming, sorry, the TNA people coming to NXT. Obviously, that's the show I cover every week for Post Wrestling on Up Next. Joe Hendry being a very big deal coming across. Jordan Grace making a few appearances. I don't think Hammerstone made quite the impact as he could have. I think just being squashed by Obafemi wasn't maybe the best move for him. But it doesn't seem like this relationship's ending anytime soon either. I fully expect to see, you know, Joe Hendry show up at the Rumble and stuff like that. So I think this relationship's going to continue. Even back to Saturday night's main event, the amount of times in Meechin versus Chelsea Green, they're saying these are two former Impact knockout champions and all that kind of stuff. I think it's a good thing. And TNA, interesting year, but seem to be in a pretty healthy position, I'd say.
Yeah. And yeah, we'll see how they do with these big arena shows coming up in 2025.
Ambitious.
But yeah, a bit. I wonder if they have some sort of commitment for NXT to get some help there or something like that. It's a big arenas to run, but we'll see what happens. Let's go through the month in Japan real quick. Ricochet and Sema taking on Vikingo and Soma Watanabe, set for October Gleet Show. Ricochet's return to that promotion, of course. You know, Ricochet versus Vikingo had a lot of people ready to check that one out. Kota Ibushi also announced for a Gleet Show. Jake Lee officially signed New Japan and then subsequently suffered a foot injury. New Japan's Kuniaki Kobayashi passed away at 68 years old. Ren Narita had to miss the Road of Destruction show with an arm injury. Hiroshi Tenzan off the New Japan Road of Destruction tour due to an injury. Shingo Takagi won the NEVER Openweight title at Destruction in Kobe. Yui Uemura had to miss 6 months with a torn triceps. Zack Sabre Jr. versus Sanada, match with the current IWGP World, set to be IWGP World Champion, and then the former champion was set for a Royal Quest. The company released a teaser for a meeting between Kenny Omega and President Hiroshi Tanahashi. Tanahashi, get too excited there for that. So Kenny Omega starting to get some screen time there again. And Tony Storm versus Mina Shirakawa and Izumi versus and Maya Iwatani was set for a Stardom show. So yeah, a lot going on in the rings of New Japan and also Stardom.
Yeah, unfortunately my interest in New Japan has been very low the last year or so. It just I feel they started putting the next generation in place way too late. It wasn't until they lost Okada and Ospreay and, you know, Naito's broken down, Tanahashi's broken down. It felt like it was a little, like too little too late, I think, pushing some of these guys. I'm so happy for Zack Sabre Jr. being the guy. I'd have loved to have seen it a year prior, you know, when it kind of, I think would have felt a bigger deal, Zack winning the title. I'll be tuning into Wrestle Kingdom. You mentioned Shingo winning the NEVER Openweight title. Him versus Takeshita just sounds awesome. I can't wait to see that match. And Wrestle Kingdom is often a pretty good time to hop back on and see what's going on in New Japan. But it's really not had my interest at all this last year. Mentioning Stardom, I mean, just from watching AEW, Mina Shirakawa's just been such a breakout this year. And it's always interesting seeing how a performer can, you know, transcend a language barrier and that sort of thing. And she's just got this awesome natural connection with the audience and is a real, real highlight of AEW for me at the moment.
All right, let's go to WWE. Won't hold off any longer. We'll lead off with a month of McMahon. Yes, because the Mr. McMahon docuseries debuted on Netflix. Very interesting timing. Of course, their deal with Netflix announced at this point, and they were originally associated with the documentary, then kind of pulled away from that. So, yeah, it was certainly had people talking. So let's go through the month and with the Janelle Grant lawsuit and also some of the fallout from the docuseries. Janelle Grant did not appear on the docuseries, was approached for an interview. Her attorney later saying she deserves to tell her own story and not be part of someone else's. Dr. Colin Coker, who was involved in this, McMahon's doctor, withdrew his complaint against Grant. Grant returned the new PR firm or existing PR firm ahead of the docuseries premiere. Conversely, Vince McMahon got a new PR firm ahead of the premiere. So obviously knew it was going to be some follow-up from that. McMahon's team releasing a statement saying that series confuses the Mr. McMahon character with my true self. Janelle Grant's attorney responded to this with a statement on the docuseries. Again, you kind of imagine what that is. We got a report that he tried to actually purchase the docuseries from Netflix before it aired. There was no money amount attached to that, but certainly didn't seem to want to get that out there. Bill Simmons, who is an executive producer on the project, said it was the strangest process on a documentary he's ever worked on. During the series, Vince McMahon said, among many other notable quotes, he has no sympathy for people who retire and tells him just to go die. That's a good thing. So this is what we talked about, the Shane McMahon stuff before. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a well-viewed from not just wrestling fans, but general fans or just the general public in altogether. It was a top series on Netflix and was in the top 10 for quite some time. Is a fascinating figure. Again, we look through this as people that follow this and are into it. So it's a lot different than made a general person who, some of the stories that they tell throughout the series, like, well, I don't know if it exactly happened like that or happened like that. And, they saved kind of the, as we know, following the news of this whole series is like, how are they going to do this? Because it felt like they were almost done with it. Then there was this huge bombshell development here and here and here. And finally they came to the end product. So, they didn't work. It left essentially one episode for all the, the Janelle Grant stuff and everything like that. I don't know. It was one of those things that based on a story that's still developing, they want to get this thing out there. I'm sure they want to get out and plenty of time to give some sort of space between the Netflix, the Raw debut and so on. That deal really kick off. It was an entertaining series. I thought it was one, it had people talking, but I thought there's a lot of criticism about how they handled the last episode, but I don't know what they could have done differently given the fact that everything kept changing by the time it came out, something new could have developed and all that. So it's, I don't think it painted a great picture of them by any means, but everyone had their own interpretation.
Well, especially when you're not getting Janelle Grant talking, and I completely respect that. Like you don't know how, with editing and stuff, your story is going to be told. And it is completely down to her to tell her side of the story in her own way. I enjoyed the documentary. I felt it was kind of just trying to serve a few too many masters. It started off as this documentary about Vince McMahon and was, I think going to show some of the warts, but still being potentially a bit of a puff piece. And then obviously all this stuff comes out as they're making the documentary. It also felt like almost a bit of a primer to a new audience, knowing that WWE's going to Netflix and, talking about, we all have it as wrestling fans. You tell someone you like wrestling and they go, oh, the fake stuff, it's not real, right? That kind of thing. And mm-hmm. I think having a documentary treating it completely that way, treating it as this is an entertainment product, having, hearing Vince talking about heels and baby faces and storylines and these words coming from his mouth and how we write a show and that sort of thing. I think it was putting wrestling on a mainstream level as we see it, by like, this is an entertainment show we watch, just like you watch your dramas or soap operas or that kind of thing. And I think it served as a bit of a primer for a new audience whilst being, you know, addressing the scandal, washing the hands of the scandal and being, well, he's gone now as well. So I think for you and I, and probably most of the listeners, nothing on this was necessarily new for us. And some things we would also question. But the amount of people I know who have watched this documentary and either have never watched wrestling before or were fans in the Attitude Era and have gone, wow, I didn't know this about Vince McMahon. I didn't know all these awful things. And I think bringing that to light to a bigger audience has been a very good thing. And yeah, it's clearly done very well because I'm still having people asking me, oh, have you seen that McMahon documentary yet? Right. So it was a bit messy in a way, but as you said, I don't know, unless you were making this in 5 years' time, I don't know what more you could have done with this at this point.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, there was when this first started, this process, you know, some of the people like Cody Rhodes and John Cena and so on, they were, and even The Rock, you know, all that stuff hadn't come out yet, right? So there is a much different approach. And I'm sure a lot of them wish that, you know, they wouldn't have had their involvement in it based on that, because they want to stay away from controversy or what have you. Yeah, there was a lot of interesting quotes from different people in it. And it was funny. I'm trying to remember what the exact, what was the thread when people are, was it, is he a good person or?
It was, yeah. So this was the last,
yeah.
It's right at the end. And this was something I don't actually think got that much attention. And you saying, would a Cody Rhodes and The Rock had been on this show after the allegations? It's when they're asking everyone, what is Vince McMahon's legacy? And
that's what it was, yeah.
And to me, that would have been a pretty easy answer. You know, these guys, like, especially people like The Undertaker, who are just like so pally with him, you know, greatest promoter of all time, created wrestling as we know it, that kind of thing. I don't think it was a necessarily hard question, yet all of them really struggled to answer. And part of me, and maybe that I'm just being a bit of a conspiracy theorist here, but part of me was like, do they have just this thing in the back of their head where Vince McMahon might not be painted in the best light in this thing, and I don't want to be so glowing about him with these things coming out? Because no one answers that question. And I found that very interesting.
I did too. I that stuck with me as one of the notes I was just looking at here, that was that and Cody Rhodes kept saying sports entertainment, and the way he kept saying sports, and it was just so weird. But yeah, the fact that they were not able to have a clean answer, so many people with his legacy, I just thought that was so telling, you know. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was supremely interesting. So yeah, it was so it's finally out there, been talked about for, you know, well over a year. And Vince McMahon has not been back. We'll talk more about him, of course, excuse me, later in the series. Ton of WWE stuff. Let's go over this first chunk, and then we'll talk about, kick it over to you for some thoughts. SmackDown official return to the USA Network here domestically. Got a new logo and theme song by the aforementioned Megan Thee Stallion, Vicky Guerrero, Rob Van Dam were among the former quote-unquote stars seen on the show at some points. The Cody Rhodes versus Solo Sikoa cage match kicked off this the new era, and there was a report that the company or the show SmackDown might potentially be moving to 3 hours starting in January. That's not, it's one of those things where it's been like, some people say it's definitely a go, some people say it's not a go, so we still don't know at this point. It's definitely going to move to 3 hours. Victoria revealed that she had signed formerly is a Legends contract, a WWE nostalgic contract. So there you go. Odyssey Jones, remember him, he was gone. Just disappeared, and then it revealed afterwards, report by Fightful, that it was due to domestic violence allegations that came out. He was part of the New Day and seemed to be getting a little bit of a push, and then, like, within a matter of weeks, was gone. Damian Priest said his role in Wakanda Forever that he was supposed to have was taken from him, but Marvel didn't take it from him, alluding to the previous regime that did so. Company, again, slow drip of removing all these old employees, longtime lead production designer, and their director of production travel were let go. Hulk Hogan said he signed a 5-year contract with the company. Cody Rhodes, WMF and Axe were all sued over the American Nightmare trademark from his lead singer of this band called American Nightmare. Cedric Alexander reportedly had re-signed a contract with the company. I was very surprised by that, given that he had talked about kind of not being happy at one point previous years and then re-signed a deal. So I guess he thought, stay where I am and kind of not risk going out and working the indies or doing whatever. This weird online feud between Kevin Nash and Logan Paul. Kevin Nash saying Logan Paul is, quote-unquote, not one of the boys. And Logan Paul responded to the criticism saying, I'm better at your job than you ever were. So who knows how much of that is working and shooting, brother, but who knows. Raw was set a move that many fans rejoiced, and let that be your guide. I'll let that tell you so much about how much wrestling is on TV. Raw was set to move to 2 hours from October through December. Again, due the transition point between USA Network to Netflix, and then they didn't have a home for 3 months due to the deal. So USA said, we'll keep you, but 2 hours per episode. So a lot of fans are happy about that. Kiana James was out of action with a leg injury. Bret Hart made his appearance, made his return rather to Monday Night Raw as confronted by Gunther, of all people. Raw was set to, again, move 2 hours. I mentioned that. Kiana James, double copy here. WWE is set to hold fewer live events in 2025. Yeah, potentially increased ticket prices, which is absolutely happening. And you're starting to see something interesting, I think, to follow in the year ahead is pricing out families and things like that. And, these PLEs sell out, no doubt, but you still have the Raws and SmackDowns to fill. The house shows are essentially dead in so many ways starting in 2025. So, it's a sign of the times, but it's also kind of a sad sign of the times in a lot of ways that, these smaller cities used to get WWE shows. Families that couldn't afford to go to the big cities and maybe see stuff, they go to smaller shows and get to see the Cody Rhodes and the top stars and, things like that. So it's a bummer, but we'll see kind of how that plays out in the year ahead. Natalya made her return to Raw and said that she needed a mental reset, which led to her absence. And then Lyra Valkyria and LJ Cleary announced their engagement. Thoughts about any of that?
Going to the live events and ticket prices. That's what business is, right? Like it's supply and demand. If there's a high demand, you're going to ask for more money for it. But just please, wrestling fans going to these shows, please don't cheer when they come out and say, we've broken a gate, or like, this is the most money we've made at one of these arena PLEs ever. And don't cheer that. You're cheering just spending more money.
So it's just so funny.
On your hands or boo. Like, no. We don't want to be spending $300+ per ticket. it is just sign of the times. It is a shame. Like it's normally we get the WWE house show loop come here over Christmas time, and it's a pretty fun show to go to. And especially when you're outpricing a lot of these families, it's like kids don't care if they're seeing the TV show or a pay-per-view. They just want to see Jey Uso and Cody Rhodes and that kind of thing. So it is a shame, but it's also good for the talent that they're not working as much. Hopefully can extend their bodies and their lives and that sort of thing by not working these brutal schedules. The Bret Hart and Gunther thing was great. I think Gunther he's been one of the best wrestlers in the world for a long time, for quite a few years now, that he's showing up on those lists at the end of the year. He's in the best matches of the year. He's in the, best wrestlers of the year conversation. But I feel 2024 was the year he really stepped up his mic work and his character work. And for someone who I think we were dreading, a lot of us were thinking, oh, he's going to go to the main roster and Vince isn't going to get him, and he's going to put him in a lederhosen and, be a stereotypical German, Austrian guy or whatever. And it hasn't been that at all. And he's managed to make his character work completely for a WWE audience, and his style work for a WWE audience. And I just think some of his lines he's had over the year, saying to Bret Hart that my favorite wrestler is Bill Goldberg, was just fantastic stuff. And it seems that we are potentially building up to a Gunther Goldberg retirement match down the line. When that happens is yet to be seen, but that's kind of been hinted at. Just got to praise Gunther's mic work this year, because I think it's been absolutely stellar.
Mm. Yeah, the Goldberg line was I said that. I mean, that's a great indication of how different WWE is now, in that under Vince era, that acknowledgement of a Bret Hart Goldberg thing, this ongoing feud, would have never been brought up. It just didn't exist. If it didn't happen here, it didn't exist, right? But now it's like they're making it part of it, and not between them, but tangentially to how Gunther is involved, and it all makes sense. Those are things that it's like I found, as much as, I'm not as still not, I have a tough time getting the WWE in-ring product for it. Just, I think the 20 years of the previous 20 years of Vince just kind of just killed me when it came to being a WWE fan. But I think the things like that are refreshing, in that they're acknowledging that there is a world outside, and I think that's a fun thing for fans, and opens up certainly possibilities. Let's talk about Bad Blood. So we had Bad Blood, which was set to take shape for obviously October in Atlanta, Georgia. Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes taking on Solo Sikoa and Jacob Fatu set for the show. Gunther versus the defending the world title against Sami Zayn. The University of Arkansas Pine Bluff Band was announced to play at the show. They were playing Cody Rhodes for that event. Nia Jax versus Bayley for the women's title rematch. The big one, of course, CM Punk versus Drew McIntyre. Hell in a Cell match was announced. Shark Cage stipulation set to the latest Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan match. And then Bianca Belair and Jade Cargo were set to host. Obviously, the anticipation with a Hell in a Cell match was, how different is WWE, and are they going to allow blood? And they certainly did, and it was refreshing. We'll talk more about that, of course, next month. Grayson Waller was announced for a PWA show in Australia. Again, the loosening of the, I'll say, the purse strings, but the reins are not even the Roman Reigns. The reins of these talents are loosened up a bit. They're able to make appearances at indie shows, and not every single person, but little things like this, which makes sense. I think that's refreshing as well. Trish Stratus trying to get that bag from WWE still, wants to be back in, clearly. The month before, saying that Cody Rhodes isn't the only one with a story. I don't remember any Trish Stratus story or anything like that, but she teased a potential match with Tiffany Stratton. Armando Alejandro Estrada signed a Legends contract, or Nostalgia contract. Mick Foley and Vince McMahon saying, "I'm choosing to appreciate him until I learn more." That is certainly something somebody can say. Sheamus signed a contract extension. John Cena set to star in this upcoming Matchbox film. Matchbox, of course, the toys from our youth. Alexa Bliss honored to be part of the voice cast for Netflix's The Queen of Villains. And then the Viking Raiders were set to return as their first vignette aired during episode of Raw. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, I thought Bad Blood was a very solid B show from WWE this year. You had two big main events with that Hell in a Cell, which I'm sure is going to be on a lot of people's match of the year list, especially WWE match of the year. That was great stuff. But the Roman Cody Bloodline stuff as well was a lot of fun, and that the Fast and Furious style meeting Cody and Roman had in the old football ground, I thought was pretty great building to that. I thought Bad Blood was a memorable show this year, and they did a good job making it so for something that could just be a B pay-per-view. As for Trish, I thought her last run was so good in WWE. The stuff with Becky Lynch, the heel turn and all that, and her actual wrestling was really solid, I thought, and really kept up with this new generation. So I'd happily see her have another run. And Tiffany Stratton does kind of make a lot of sense as well. So that's something I'd very much like to see. As I've been going through, the story of John Cena on the Champ Is Here show, I've seen a fair bit of Armando Alejandro Estrada in the Umaga feud and
Yes.
signing a Legends contract. I think I've seen him. Has it been he's been managing Zilla Fatu on the Indies?
Maybe occasionally. I've seen Zilla once, and he wasn't with him. So I think it may be like
Okay.
select shows, maybe something where they're local together, you know what I mean?
I think maybe not for an extended thing, but I feel we have to have him with Bloodline 2.0 at some point. Just I think that tie-in is just he's signed a Legends contract. Let's do it. And then Foley, I think that's a pretty diplomatic answer there, and I think some people could maybe learn on being a little bit more, diplomatic when talking about Vince McMahon. Just being, yeah, I'll wait until more information, and but I appreciate him, you know, you appreciate the work he's done, I guess, is what he's saying there. But
yeah,
I do kind of feel for some of these people who are put in the position of making a comment one way or the other.
What I was just saying with Estrada, you mentioned him being part of the bloodline potentially. I think, you know, they don't need every single you know, Samoan or tie-in to be on the main roster just yet. If they were to expand in NXT, I mean, that'd be a good spot for him. It was Hikuleo and is it Lance Inoue Jr.?
Yeah.
I mean, if they're like, yeah, if the feeling is they're not main roster ready, just expand the brand, so to speak, you know, make the bloodline part of that as well. And that'd be a good place to potentially have him, you know. And maybe, I think everyone assumes that Zilla Fatu is going to be part of this at some point. He certainly has a presence. Seeing him in person, he's got it. He has absolutely got it. Again, you could have him in NXT for a while. There's so much talent, so much stuff going on that you don't have to rush everyone to the main roster. So you expand it out and let the bloodline kind of run on NXT and make kind of a even more of a long-term thing. I think that would work out pretty well. And he might be a great mouthpiece for that.
Absolutely agree, 100%.
All right, let's go through the last chunk of WWE stuff. Jey Uso winning the Intercontinental title in episode of Raw. Big E getting updated neck scans, and at this point it's 3 to 6 months, and says that new projects are upcoming for him. Logan Paul and Nina Agdal welcome the birth of their first child. Asuka reportedly signed a new long-term contract, part of a trend throughout 2024 of a lot of names signing long-term deals, not even bothering going to free agency. Kairi Sane received stitches for a cut she suffered on the show. Io Sky won the first ever women's speed match. It was officially announced that Saturday night's main event would be returning in December, happening last weekend. As we record this, airing on both NBC and Peacock, Shayna Baszler signed a new contract. Raw on Netflix set to be what is expected to be a 3-hour show. I think there's been some reporting after that, you know, sometimes it might be under 3 hours. So, you know, just they're going to let the show kind of dictate because they don't have a set time to be done. And I think that's potentially good. If a show is if you're like 224 and you're like, we got it, then go with God, you know, be done with it and all this stuff. And if you have to get a little bit over, that's fine. But I think less is more, especially with just so much content to watch. And at that point, it was reported they're looking at the Intuit Dome in LA for their debut. And that would be confirmed as they'll debut there in just a couple weeks. Milwaukee set to be putting together a bid for Money in the Bank 2025. Roman Reigns was advertised for the War Games edition of Survivor Series. So he was set to be officially back in the mix. I think it was announced like 10 more dates during this. So back in the mix as the Bloodline versus Bloodline feud continued. They revealed our Elton Prince and Kelly Kincaid welcomed the birth of their first child. Company revealed their WrestleMania 41 ticket on sale date. Cody Rhodes announced a presenter for the People's Choice Country Awards. Company announced they were bringing a 2-night SummerSlam. Yes, 2 nights of SummerSlam. This is going to happen more with these PLEs to New Jersey in 2025. Company announced 9 new event locations for the end of the year, which will be essentially their last house shows for quite some time, including one right down the street from AEW World's End. And then AJ Styles, aka Macho Man Randy Savage Jr., has been pointed out this show is set to return on an episode of SmackDown. Anything there that caught your eye?
Yeah, I think WWE did a great job with Jey Uso this year, and Jey Uso did a great job this year in getting himself over. Even though that IC title run wasn't long, I think it was completely effective in, you know, having him feel like a big solo star on the roster that they made reference the other day. We don't get Jimmy and Jay confused anymore. We know exactly who they are individually. And I thought that IC run was very effective for Jay in this part of his career. Yeah, I'm trying to think other things there. Personally, I know I'm in the absolute minority, but I have kind of missed the 3-hour roars. For me,
wow, all right, you're the one. Look, all right,
I'm not someone who reviews Raw, so I'm not sat down with my laptop intently reviewing 3 hours of Raw every Monday. Mondays are my night. I finish work, I come home, I chill, I put on Raw, I do a bit of cleaning around the place, I cook some dinner, I chill, and it's felt weird ending after 2 hours. And I think it took them well over a decade to get there, but I actually think they started getting the pacing right with those 3-hour shows. And we were starting to get, you know, good substantial matches. I'm thinking like a Chad Gable really stood out in that era because he was able to go out there and do a great 20-minute match.
Sure.
And I think the pacing's been a little weird since. So I really like the idea of, you know, Netflix. It's the runtime is what it needs to be for each week. If you want to go 3 hours 1 week because you've got a lot you want to fit in there and you know, you want a solid main event with a decent amount of time, it can be three. If it's 2:30, it's 2:30. If it's 1:58, it's 1:58. And I'm hoping that's the way it's going to be, because I think that's going to be very beneficial to it. And we've seen that kind of aspect with dramas on these streaming service. You know, some episodes are 42 minutes, some are an hour and three, and it's just to tell the story you want to tell that week. So I am looking forward to that a lot.
Yeah, especially, I was thinking about this too. Your fans aren't going to be upset in the arena. Like, if you put on I think you go to concerts, right? So many concerts, like, there are set lists that are an hour and a half. There are some that are like an hour and 10 minutes. Some are 3 hours. I've seen bad to great and everything in between. And sometimes you kind of look at your watch in the middle of the show and you're like, okay. And then other times it's just like, wow, I wish they'd play for another, 20 minutes, but I can't wait to see them again. Right. And I think if you give people a killer show, no matter what, they're not looking at their watch, going to be like, that was great. And the next time they come, I'm going to feel this feeling again, and they're going to buy tickets. So do whatever is best for the creative, not necessarily just to fill time.
Absolutely.
Let's go to the month in NXT. A lot going on here. Of course, the Jordan Grace, the TNA, NXTNA, the rivalry between both brands. Teaming Jordan Grace defending the Knockouts title in Open Challenge, and I think she'll be probably one day defending the NXT Women's title, I would expect, at all said and done in 2025. Second NXT on CW show in St. Louis had to be moved to Chesterfield, Missouri. All the pro AEW people were really happy about this. You know, finally they got one for their side, so to speak. And tickets were not selling well in St. Louis. They had to move to a smaller venue, which happens. Randy Orton versus Javon Evans, a sexy red appearance set for the show. And everything was full steam ahead for the CW premiere in October in Chicago. A lot of main roster talent lined up for the show, including CM Punk. He was set to guest referee the Ethan Page versus Trick Williams main event for the title on that very show. Julia was set to challenge Roxanne for the women's title. A-Town Down issued a tag team title challenge for St. Louis for that second show against Axiom and Nathan Frazier. NXT, again, at the end of the month, their run on USA came to a close. Steve Corino signed a new contract. Julia made her debut against Chelsea Green. I was surprised they debuted her before the title match. I thought they kind of go right into it, but I guess they thought maybe she needed a little bit more face time with people or fans or something like that. I don't know. No Mercy, Nathan Frazier and Axiom won the tag team titles. Julia, the aforementioned Julia, made her debut and confronted Roxanne Perez. Lyra Valkyria and Chelsea Green, again, main roster talents, appeared on the show. Street Profits appeared in the show, set to replace the Rascals. In a tag team match, the Bloodline appeared, attacking the Street Profits, Nathan Frazier and Axiom. The Motor City Machine Guns report came out. They're expected to debut in NXT imminently. That would not be correct. They would go right to the main roster. Stephanie Vaquer made a surprise video appearance on the show. Nikki Alliance made her in-ring return in a house show. And then Tatum Paxley and Javier Bernal got married. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, NXT is my show. That's the show I cover every Tuesday night on Post Wrestling. I've watched every single episode of this show. And I think 2024 has been a really solid year for them. I think 2.0 is far in the rearview mirror window now at this point. And it's been a solid show. The women especially are just awesome on this show. They're the main focus. You say, you know, we've had Jordan Grace like pop in and out, but Julia, Stephanie Vaquer, Zaria, Roxanne, you know, they've got such a solid women's division there. And it's really been the main focus of this show. Frazier and Axiom have just been such a fun tag team to watch. They are my tag team of the year in wrestling. I just think if you're someone who kind of skips over NXT, maybe go back and cherry pick some of their matches over the year, because they've been hell of a lot of fun to watch. I will say the CW move, I think there's still some pacing issues for me. On USA, they always had that like 7-minute overrun, and it really feels like they haven't figured it out yet, because I think the problem is a lot of these matches have felt short. I thought Julia and Roxanne the first time round left me wanting more. which is a good thing, but their match on New Year's Evil is also a TV show, so I worry that they're going to suffer from the same thing, lack of time. I felt the same with the matches haven't quite hit for me as much on the CW, and I think it's just it's pacing, it's lack of time, it's a match starting, going straight to commercial break, coming back, you get a minute, and it's the finish. So I'd like to see them figure that out, maybe just on the run sheet, cut a segment to just give everything like a minute more would help. But overall, I've been really high up on NXT this year. I think they've done a pretty good job of reestablishing themselves. And I've loved, yeah, I know they downsized in and moved to Chesterfield, but I've loved these venues they've been running whilst being on the road. They look different. They have a different feel to it. It feels completely different from the main roster, but you're getting out of that studio setting. And I think it's made NXT look really cool when you're in some of these venues. And I think it's something AEW could take note from.
Yeah, exactly. I did not see NXT this past week. Did they mention the historical significance of NXT to Lowell in the auditorium?
Very much so. Yeah. Are you being tongue in cheek there or
no?
They did a whole Ethan Page losing his smile angle.
Well, I saw that, but I heard about that. However, in that very venue, I was in that venue when last time's NXT ran it, when Samoa Joe defeated Finn Balor for the NXT title.
On the house show, wasn't that?
Yep, non-televised show.
Wow.
And I was there, and I'm like, that was obviously a long time ago. And I remember it was like, holy shit, I don't know if anyone else here has this, like this working for a wrestling website. So I was like trying to write on my phone. And I think I have my laptop in the car and I'm trying to figure this out and find like, it was, but I remember that at that boat. But yes, obviously the Shawn Michaels losing the smile. I remember that it was like a surprise. I didn't know where it was a ton of people there. And that was a really fun show. I remember that night. So I was just curious if they even, you know, I guess they probably didn't bring Samoa Joe winning the title since he doesn't work for the company anymore. But yeah, there's some history there.
You say that though, they did an awesome video highlighting the women's championship and just about how NXT has the best women's division and therefore the NXT women's championship is the best prize in women's wrestling, and they went through every single women's champion,
Sasha Banks and
Sasha
Paige.
Banks, yep. Paige, all of the lot, who Ember Moon, and they didn't shy away from those people, which I think in a previous era they would have. They could have absolutely brought up that Finn Balor Samoa Joe thing. We did have highlights of more main roster stuff happening at Lowell, but yeah, it was a good episode this week, I thought.
Yeah. And one thing throughout the year of NXT as well was they went on the road more with their PLEs or special events or whatever you want to call them. They didn't, you know, I think every four times a year, give or take, or something like that. So I'm interested to see if they do, you know, with WWE doing less house shows, I wonder if there's an opportunity to do that more, just kind of start edging out a little bit more, especially some of these weekends where they're not really doing anything. You know, can't a chance. I wonder if long term the idea is maybe they can try to really build this up into a third brand that could draw 3,000-4,000 people in the row with short costs for house show type things. And you know, that'd be TKO is all about money. If they can make money, they're going to do it. I wonder if that's going to be down the road depending on what happens in the business the next couple of years.
I think, you know, we mentioned about the house shows there being a lack of, and having NXT fill that void. You might have noticed that all these shows are not being branded as NXT now. It's WWE New Year's Evil. It's that kind of thing. So,
oh really? Maybe, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So all the NXT PLEs are now, or special TV events are just WWE.
And then I hadn't noticed that, huh?
So I think that that's a very obvious branding thing to try and, you know, get people. Oh, WWE's in town rather than NXT. And if we are cutting back on house shows, I think having NXT and doing what they're doing, having a main roster, having someone come down to kind of add that star power for a local show would be a good move, I think. And it would certainly help. I mean, these are the people that need to be working house shows, need to be working more, right? To improve and get those reps. So yeah. I think that would make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, I think you have another interesting year ahead for sure. And a great deal financially for the CW. Keep pulling in nice numbers every single week and at short money. So big stuff for NXT. Let's go through the junk drawer. This is everything else that did not fit in the categories above. FTR set to make their Deadlock Pro Wrestling debut. Big indie out of North Carolina. Willow Nightingale set to defend the women's title at CMLL's 91st anniversary show. We'll talk about that. She'd lose. Joe Hendry was added back to a House of Glory event. He was set to miss, I believe, due to travel issues due to hurricane, but then was able to make it after all. Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling, a big thing up in there in the Great White North. Konosuke Takeshita announced to be facing Mike Bailey as part of this big weekend. Mackenzie Mitchell, former NXT broadcaster, set for a role in the brand, or the company, rather. Athena set to face Giselle Shaw for the Ring of Honor Women's title. How about that? And Don Callis was also announced for the commentary team, so the buzz and the build towards Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling was starting to build. Again, CMLL 91st anniversary show, I just mentioned that. Mystico defeated Chris Jericho in the main event. One of the very slow transitions to La Magistral, or whatever is the finisher move of the submission. Just remember seeing clips afterwards and just felt like it was in slow motion. So not really the best match, but it happened. And then Zeus defeated Willow Nightingale for the women's title. Poor Willow. She wins these titles and cannot hold them for more than like 45 days. I mean, you go through these title runs, she's going to get the run at some point. I just hope they didn't miss the apex, you know. Red Velvet from Ring of Honor, Tony Storm, are set to make their debuts in CMLL, JBL, as he's done for seemingly every single promotion but WWE, making a surprise appearance, showing up in the cowboy hat, the duster, laying someone out, and then leaving. MLW had to cancel Florida show due to Hurricane Helene. Donovan Dijak, Kevin Knight, and Trevor Lee set to make their MLW in-ring debuts. Emma and Riddick Moss expecting their first child. Former NXT UK wrestler Amelie alleged abuse from Tristan Archer, and WXW announcing shortly thereafter they would not work with him anymore following those allegations. Kurt Angle was announced for his first GCW appearance at their Dream On show, an event that also Mick Foley was set to appear at, and there was an angle they did at that show, which left the fans happy. Smiles on faces, as Stephanie McMahon used to say so much. Leilani Kai from the 80s said she was feeling amazing after getting total hip replacement. NWA Power, just the strangest promotion, set to air on X / Twitter for the next 5 weeks. Just their TV deal and how everything works at company is just, I don't get it. I don't get it. Nikki Bella, the fallout from the domestic violence incident from August, contacted divorce lawyers, and her husband Artem Ching, I have no idea how to pronounce this. Artem C, I guess we'll say this, from Dancing with the Stars, said he wouldn't face charges over the arrest. If I remember the wording of the district attorney, basically they needed evidence in order to prove this. They just didn't have it. And then Nikki Bella eventually filing for divorce after this. So that just messy situation continued. Yeah. Zilla Fatu, no longer with Game Changer Wrestling. Not really sure why, if it was over money or what have you. He was still continuing to work indie dates and all that, but no longer with GCW. Dustin Rhodes say he was launching the Rhodes Wrestling Association in November. Ric Flair saying he and his longtime lady, Wendy Barlow, decided to part ways respectfully. Vikingo returned from injury at AAA's TV tapings. Dante Martin was set for the Rev Pro British J-Cup, NBA star rather, Dwight Howard, saying that Ric Flair had to talk him out of a career in wrestling. How about that? Thoughts about any of that?
I think the Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling was the most interesting thing on that list for me. I thought it was a pretty great show, and it reminded me of sort of, you know, House of Glory, almost like a super indie where all these people from other promotions are going to, and some real like dream matches on that show, you know, Takeshita and Mike Bailey on that show. I think, didn't we have Takeshita and Josh Alexander, I think, was on that show as well. I thoroughly enjoyed that, and I'm looking forward to more. I mean, running Maple Leaf Gardens just down the road from me here in Toronto would be awesome. And I had a lot of fun watching that Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling show. So hope there is more down the line. Other things, I can't say I've seen a lot of, you know, Dijak and Trevor Lee in MLW. I'm still not sure if MLW is actually a real show or not. same with NWA Power, to be honest. The Nikki Bella stuff, like, pretty sad. You don't like to see that, especially when there's, you know, young kids involved as well. Not much more. I can't say I caught much of the CMLL stuff either. this year.
Yep, exactly. But certainly they had a big year's promotion. I can't say I have either, but people seem to love those Arena Mexico shows on Friday. And I thought they've made, I said earlier in the series, I thought they made a pretty good accounting for themselves in AEW. And really, I think there's a fatigue factor with New Japan and AEW, and the fact that it seems like, you know, the signings of Okada and Ospreay, and I think they're, it just, and guys like Jay White, it doesn't feel like they're, all these dream matches and kind of the importance of when they came over, it's gone now because they don't really have those stars. And it feels like it's a constant presence versus CML. There's these drop-ins. I thought, you know, guys like Hechicero, who I had never seen before, and I'm like, I need to see more of him because I just, that style was just so unique and different. And yeah, I thought the CML inclusion worked for them.
I half agree with you.
Okay.
I do feel when they've bought New Japan guy, like think an Ospreay or an Okada before signing, they treated them like a star.
Right.
And I think that first time I saw Hechicero, I was like, who is this guy? And definitely grabbed my attention. But these CMLL guys just didn't win anything unless it was on Rampage and I didn't see it. I thought MJF made Hechicero seem like such a joke in that feud. And I thought it was a shame. I thought you could have brought these guys in, educated your audience, and actually have them get some wins on TV to make them feel like a bigger deal, make them feel a bit more protected. And instead, yeah, it's a cool drop in and you'd have some fun Lucha matches on Rampage. But I thought you could have treated them maybe with a bit more respect on AEW.
Yeah, good point. Good point. I appreciate that take. Well, good. Well, that was a busy month of September from all around the wrestling world. And yeah, before I let you go, let's give you a chance to plug where the people can follow you on social, where they can check you out on Patreon, of course, and all the other ways to connect with the content. The floor is yours.
Absolutely. You can find me on Post Wrestling every Tuesday night with Up Next, our NXT review show. And then follow Poison Rana in your podcast feeds and on YouTube, Poison Rana Pod, where we do a weekly Sunday show going through all the news in pro wrestling. You know, it's the holidays at the moment, so scheduling is a little all over the place right now. But come January, we'll be back to our usual stuff. And then we have a Patreon where we go back and we review, you know, retro wrestling. We've been doing our John Cena show that we mentioned on there. We have a show called Best Match Ever, where we look at the best matches in people's careers or best matches from a certain pay-per-view, etc. And also just random movie reviews as well. Lots of, you know, Christmas films are up there right now. A lot of horror films for Halloween. Just films starring wrestlers, films not starring wrestlers, just things that kind of our listeners kind of want to hear us talk about. It's only $5, and that's patreon.com/poisonrana. And you can find us at Twitter and Instagram at poisonranapod, and you can find me at Davey Portman. And we're also on Blue Sky at poisonrana.ca and at davey.poisonrana.ca. So follow us on Blue Sky, trying to make a bit of a move to over there now.
Gotcha. Well, I had a great time on the Poison Rana series of John Cena. I greatly appreciate that you asked me. I had so much fun with that. It was so great. So hopefully looking forward to people that have not heard already to be checking that out at some point. And looking forward to talking more in the year ahead. Davey Portman,
absolutely.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Josh. Chat soon. Take care.